The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
All right.
Yeah. People who are watching this morning will notice we're calling in from remote locations.
That's right. We are, I have to be out of town this weekend, so we're going to do a quick show this morning. I didn't want to put it off like we have been in the past. And now with the, be able to get on Google Hangouts, we all have a decent setup. So hopefully this works, although this is our first time in a long time that we tried something like this. Anyway, so let's start up. I don't have the soundboard, so we're going to have to just go off of, or I'm going to be plugging in the sound bites later.
Okay.
Anyway, so this is, you're listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 160.
Happy birthday to you, GNU.
Yes, happy birthday, GNU.
And yeah, and Tom, you said you have something else special to go along with it, don't you?
Yes, I planned it. My daughter was born the same day as GNU Linux. Not the same year. I'm not that old. Just the same day. She's only 14. GNU is 32.
Yeah, so.
All right.
Pretty cool.
So what did you guys do this week?
Well, I worked on my review quite a bit. I did some testing, some VSD testing and research and all of that just in preparation for that, which will be coming up in an upcoming episode pretty soon. So I did that. Not a whole bunch of other software related things, but that's pretty short list for me.
Hey, Tom.
Working on a lot of recovery problems for clients who seem to be unable to back up things and then have to recover it. Been getting more in depth with some of the Linux tools like Foremost and Scalpel. If you haven't used them, they're great recovery tools to get files off of hard drives that are pretty trashed. As long as they'll physically spin, it does a pretty good job of carving out the files. And working with a new client that just utter lack of documentation, four sites, thousands of devices, and no map of how any of it's all interconnected, neither physical or software maps on anything. So that's been fun. It's kind of like we kind of actually have to do some pen testing from the we have physical access to some of the network, but we're just reverse engineering everything, So I'm just nmapping everything and just creating lists and going from there. It's kind of fun. They have such a multitude of devices, too, of, ONIF cameras, PoE switches, crazy subnet setups. There was no plan. I think it just kept happening, and it kept growing, and now they're in trouble, so they brought me in to help fix it. It's a fun challenge.
Hey, that's awesome.
Puzzle, really, when you think about it.
It's a puzzle you can't just take apart either, because they're all working and they can't have it go down, but they don't know why it's all working.
that's the challenge. running, and you can't just take them down and then slowly bring them back up and then map it from that perspective.
That would be easy, because of course my employees are like, can't we just tear this whole thing apart? And I'm like, no. We can't just tear it apart. As much fun as that would be and much easier, we kind of got to keep mapping it. And just the software alone that we started with was expired licenses all over the place. There's no version consistency across any of their security systems. They're all the same exact security system, and some of them are up to date, some of them aren't. And it's weird because you're like, one's two versions behind, one's four versions behind. There's not a consistency to why these things weren't updated, and I don't understand. So it's like we're just bringing it all up. And some of it, they have paid support. They're paying support contracts, and no one's loading the updates.
Wow.
Yeah, really? To me, like, challenges go far beyond just mapping their network and all of the connected devices, that they really have to take a look at their policy.
This took a level of ineptitude that is on a scale I've never seen, with as much money behind it as you've never seen.
Yeah. Well, it's going to definitely keep you busy for a while.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Keep us posted on your progress.
Yeah, I'm going to discover some neat things with it. With the there was really weird PoE stuff going on. When they upgraded PoE switches, more cameras died. So they thought that would fix it. Instead, they ended up with 13 cameras went down after they swapped out a PoE switch.
Wow.
So there's some so I got incompatibilities to sort out, too.
Wow, that's not very good.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, so you were talking about Foremost. I've used that in the past, and what's interesting is it just grabs all files and dumps it into a big folder, so there's no file structure to it. So I was able to find some scripts that would go through and sort out the files, and like put all JPEGs in one spot, put all the other stuff, and then it'll also, you can have it sort by size, because you don't want a bunch of little JPEGs, so all that's going to be little icons from your computer. So you want, like, the largest JPEGs, and you can copy those off easily.
Yeah, I got a script. One of the recoveries you ran revealed 90,000 files when we recorded, when we got the pictures. After running the script, there was only, like, I don't know, less than 1,000 actual pictures in there. So you, if you don't run the script, you just end up with tons of crap, like you said, icons of everything. Exactly, thumbnail caches is mostly what it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about thumbnail caches. Cool.
Yeah, Linux keeps a lot on.
Right. Yeah, cool. So, So this weekend, my wife's family has a family reunion. So I am mid-state Michigan today, and we're going to try to keep this short because there's a breakfast that's supposed to happen in a couple hours. So we're going to get through the show, and hopefully you guys like the content. And then next week, we're going to be at OLF, Ohio Linux Fest. Yeah, so Tom and I are driving down, Friday afternoon?
Friday afternoon.
Yeah, and so we're going to miss most of the Friday talks and stuff. We might make it there in time for happy hour. I think last year they had free beer or something.
So you don't want to drive too fast through Ohio, though.
Right.
Yeah, they kind of don't like that. They'll catch you. You don't want that to happen. No. But, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'll probably beat you guys down there maybe by an hour or two.
All right. So,
cool. All right. So what do we got coming up next? Or what else did you, I don't mean to cut you off. What else did you? Anything else?
No, that was it. I didn't know. There's a few talks at Ohio Linux Fest that I'm looking forward to. And you know what's neat on there on the website? You go on the left. There's a icon or like at the top link. It says schedule. It takes you right to their schedule, and then you can go through and just click on ones you can add to your own schedule. And it's on their website, so it doesn't add it to your Google Calendar or anything. But you can go through and just see the ones that you're interested in.
I came there to the schedule, Tony, like you said. And I thought, I'm going to put together some things that are of interest to me. So I typed in BSD, and I discovered that I will not be going to any sessions. There's I mean, I realize it's Linux Fest, and that's great because I use Linux too. But I was hoping for something that had a little bit of BSD in there, but I didn't see it. So,
Well, there's some that I think is interesting that is really cross-platform. It's not specifically Linux. And like Kevin O'Brien's doing one on encryption basics. Mm-hmm. Another one that looked interesting was the anatomy of attack.
Yeah, that's on my list too.
Yeah, by Drew. So hopefully, so that looks really good. What ones were you guys looking at?
Defense in depth, your security castle sounds interesting. I might go to the de-Googlefy your life because I'm getting pretty in depth with Google. I like it. I just need to find replacements for some of the things I have. I don't know if that's where the talk's going to go, but if it's going there, that's definitely, I like calendaring. I just like how seamless it works with me and my employees. So it's one of those, it's convenient. I share calendars and, you know, here we are at Google Hangouts. And how to painlessly discover what you don't know. I'd like to find it out painlessly what I don't know, because obviously these are things I'm always thinking about as security and attack vectors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what the opposite is, painfully figuring out where you make mistakes or somebody hacks you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I've actually dealt with a few clients that had been painfully owned, and that's why I was there to try and figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're going to probably get some good insight there anyway. I have to confess, I have not figured out my schedule after the shock and the shock and disappointment of having BSD not mentioned once. I'm going to have to go back and figure something else out. But, no, you guys are right. It's chock full of some really great sessions, and I'm just going to have to kind of figure out what track I want to focus on and then just go down that track. So.
All right.
The security track looks great. I just went down it, and I can probably spend the all day just going through the security stuff. So, I don't know, I love it. So,
yeah. Oh, hey, by the way, too, I did get my my BSD T-shirt from BSD Now, the webcast or the podcast, and so I'll be wearing my BSD shirt. So there'll be some BSD there anyway.
All right. Very cool. All right, I think up next we have is listener feedback.
Yes, we do. Recent episode.
Yeah, I know Kevin O'Brien emailed us. He said that he's happy to see the new SMLR 2.0 and that he thinks it'll only grow stronger with the new format. So thank you, Kevin.
Yep, thanks, Kevin. Always appreciate having you as a steady, solid listener and always appreciate your input. And, you know, sometimes Kevin comes in as a guest host, too, or just a guest. So that's...
Just a guest.
So.
Yeah, well, we've had him as both, yeah.
Yeah. So,
all right, and then also we had an email from Robert, and he was saying about how he remembers us, or he saw us talking about the IBM 350 drive. And he says he remembers back when he worked with the Hildreth punch cards.
Hildreth punch cards? Boy, that's back in the day.
Yep. Do an image search when you get a minute for the IBM 350 drive. It's just cool. You just go to Google Images. Wonderful. There's a lot of photos and everything else of it. So live in nostalgia for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, speaking of those punch cards, I can remember, this is when I was pretty young then, but I had, I was working, I think I was in the Air Force, actually, and I remember they had the stack of cards, and they put it in this hopper, and they would just read it into this device at the time. I didn't realize, I didn't completely fully appreciate what it was, because I wasn't doing that particular job, but... you know, it's kind of amazing. You just had to be very careful with these cards, because if one got kind of a little physically messed up, it could just stop the whole process, you know, reading in that program and running it. So it's kind of cool.
Those must have been so tedious, you know. One little hole in the wrong spot and it's over. Start over.
That's it. Just continuing on with the listener feedback, I just wanted to mention, Tony, I didn't know if you had any others, but I've got one.
Continuing.
I heard from Julian, I think, you know, in an episode, a couple episodes ago, I was talking about my Samsung Galaxy S3, and now that it's just a kind of an extra device, it's not my primary phone anymore, that I was wanting to root it. And, of course, I think one of the challenges is trying to find the proper tools to do that. But what Julian did is he said that he successfully rooted and ROMed his Galaxy S3. And he then provided the steps that he used to root it. So as soon as I find it, because I think I mentioned before that it's, I think it got stuck in some stack of something somewhere. And... as soon as I find it, I'm going to go ahead and give these steps a try. But what I also will know for anyone else who wants to give it a whirl and just see how they work. So I want to thank Julian for providing that to me. And that I think was one piece of feedback that that I got.
Great. Yeah. We also had feedback from Robert Ross. No, we just talked about him. I'm sorry.
Frank on the hacking.
Oh yeah, and Frank. Go ahead, Tom.
No, so Frank, we had a little dialogue on the conversation about hacking. He brought up some points about, you know, maybe more stringent and law enforcement or legislation to hopefully push some ethics on people. We can agree to disagree on that. So I have my thoughts on it, that most of the time, like the guy who was running security for Sony, I don't think there's anything criminal he did. It was just ignorance, and I'm sure it's not on his resume that he worked for Sony for X amount of years doing it. As long as there's no lives on the line, so to speak, you know, when you're securing a medical device, okay, there's people in that, so I can see legal charges being brought, or you go into things like the hack on Target, there's a huge monetary because they lost everybody's credit card, and it just creates a bunch of headache because if you had your credit card lost, you're like, well, every time I switch credit cards, I have like all these things I have to change, places that auto-bill my credit card. So it inconvenienced people like myself, but I don't know if there's anything criminal there. Most of the time, I think this the industry is slowly improving, never the rate that we want, but yeah, it was some good dialogue and feedback related to our ethical hacking. And then, of course, we have the Volkswagen, which wasn't out at the time, but it comes to the question of, you know, they were trying to reverse engineer Volkswagen. Should they be using open source and things like that? And once again, Volkswagen is now facing massive fines, and I don't know what's going to happen with the company, but, you know, all this closed source and that, and will these people, you know, are they going to, and I'm glad they haven't seen any persecution of people that reverse engineered the Volkswagen. You know, you've always got all these little dilemmas related to it. But it was a good discussion. I'm glad we had it last time, and it did bring out some interesting feedback. I love when good dialogue in a very civil manner comes out.
Yeah, and when it generates interesting feedback, other perspectives, I think that, yeah, just is very beneficial.
Yeah.
Too often, I think in the tech world, we resort to, I don't include the three of us, but people resort to flame wars and this, that, and the other thing, and it's just not beneficial. It's not productive, so.
Right. Some people jump on the, you're wrong. That's it. That's and there's no further feedback. They just instantly, you're wrong. There is no way I will listen to you. And if you talk, I'll be louder than you. Wait a minute, that's American politics.
Hey, speaking of that, I posted on Google+. I don't know if you guys saw it, but Donald Trump Halloween costumes are sold out.
Aw.
No way. That's crazy.
What am I going to put out?
To add to the tech side of this, our wonderful John McAfee has joined the Republican presidential circus. You know who John McAfee, inventor of McAfee software?
Yeah. Oh, I always called it McAfee.
McAfee. Yeah.
McAfee, whatever. So he joined in what way?
He's running for president.
Really, that's crazy. Wasn't he the guy that, like, a year ago he was bouncing around the southern half of southern hemisphere of the world because he was being chased for killing somebody?
Yes.
Or am I talking to him?
Yes.
He sounds like he's qualified to run for president.
And my favorite part was because he's doing a CNN interview, and he recently got busted in Tennessee with an arsenal of weapons, and he was DUI. And he stood there, and I love what he says in front of the camera. He goes, they're going to clear me of the charges for my DUI because once all the tests come back, they'll find out I was not drunk at all. I was completely trashed on Xanax.
Yeah, that's even better.
Wow. I'm like, so that's your technicality you're going to get out of your ticket for, is you were trashed on Xanax, not there. And it's all in the same sense, and I'm running for president. He's a really smart guy, but he's a super eccentric guy. He was actually doing a lot of cocaine even while he wrote the McAfee antivirus software. Employees have stories of craziness that he's done. He's tried every drug because he wanted to. And then he started inventing drugs. That's why he left the U.S., went to the Southern Hemisphere to invent new drugs, like with a lab.
Oh. Wow.
Well, he's funny.
I appreciate eccentricity. Sometimes, well, I think he probably took it a little far.
But. He's at a different level.
Yeah, definitely is. So. All right. So, where are we?
Oh, we talked about Xanax. And yeah, I talked
about Xanax. Scott Dowdle emailed us about VirtualBox and KVM. So he said, Tom, that he watched your video.
No, I like the look of KVM, Vagrant, or so many different ones out there now. I love that the virtualization world has really taken off. I'm going to sit down and probably take another in-depth look at that. I like the simplicity of the VirtualBox. That's something he commented. It really works for what I want. There are some expanded options when you get into some of the other virtualization systems. But I one of the reasons I went with VirtualBox, it's easy not just for me to use, even though I'm an advanced Linux user, I have to have stuff that my employees have no problem using. So if I'm at the Ohio Linux Fest and the server has a problem, my employees like web interfaces. I only have, out of all the people that work for me, I've only got one other guy who's more Linux savvy, and he's not as good as me, so he's learning. But it takes time for them to get there. So having something simple that they can just go, hey, I can click a web interface, start, stop servers, and stuff like that. But no, I want to take a look at some of the other stuff. KVM looked really solid.
Very cool.
So any other feedback?
That's all that I saw.
Okay.
All right. Then next up is what? Let's see. I think we should skip the distros this week for time. Got to be quick on the show. So we're going to go on into news.
Well, actually, I wanted to just briefly talk about something related to that, only because I did some research and work. So I'm just going to just quickly mention that. Within the last couple of weeks, Turnkey Linux released version 14.0. And I want to mention Turnkey Linux because for anyone who's not familiar with it, Turnkey Linux is basically a fully operational image or virtual environment covering a number of different applications. I mean, you can have a complete LAMP stack that's already configured and ready to go. I mean, you may want to additionally tweak it to your specifics. But they've added, I think, they've added some additional applications to their release or their palette of various images. I just wanted to mention that because Tony, you'll recall, because Tom, this was before you joined the show. I tried it two or three years ago, and really had some fun with it. You can run it up, you can run it locally, you can download these things and run them locally on your desktop or laptop, or you can also run them in the Amazon Cloud on ET2, which is what I did. I tried both, so it was really pretty cool. So they include a monitoring, they've got a minimalist monitoring system called Monit, which will alert you via email when various parameters are exceeded, for example, RAM, CPU, or HDD limits, and they've got some defaults in there as far as when you get notified. So I just wanted to mention that, again, because I've always been kind of partial to Turnkey Linux and some of the things that they offer people. So, and that was what I wanted to really get out. There you go.
Nice. No, I like that. Yeah, I like Turnkey because you can set up full, server systems and it just runs. You don't have to know all the back end and the requirements to get it running.
Exactly. So, yeah. And, one of the things, too, they added with this particular release is they have been automatically installing security updates because they correctly figure that people who are running turnkey Linux machines may not be completely conversant in keeping all aspects of their security up to date. I'm going to stop here for a second because my phone should be plugged in, but I'm getting a battery low thing. But anyway, all I want to say about Turnkey Linux is that they're going to now alert you via email when the updates have been installed, which is something they didn't do in the past. So I think that's really a nice way for them to kind of keep track of that.
There's another, and I have to look up the name of the distro now. It was kind of the same concept, but it was for video and audio editing. It was a distribution that essentially a live one, but you could try out all the tools in one place for audio and video, which included Caden Live on there and a couple others. I thought it was kind of a cool concept, so you could just boot up and test out an environment for doing that. It was all in there. I think we talked about it a couple times ago. There was an update to one of the other ones that was dedicated for audio editing, and it had a list of the different audio editing tools in there. But they have one for that does audio and video. I don't think that it's well supported, but the concept is there, where you can get a workstation instantly up and running to do video and audio editing.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So, okay, that's all I wanted to say. So, Tony, continue. I'm sure maybe we'll be done by the time my phone. I don't know why I'm not charging here. It's kind of a...
Is it plugged in? Always the first question we have to ask.
Well, I have a plugged in the same port, so...
Well, I say, Mary, let's go on to the convention scene, because if your phone dies on us, then at least we get that in there, right?
All that one, too, I want to get out and work. Yeah, that's all. What I'm covering now is the Linux and open source software convention scene for the month of October. And, of course, I want to first of all mention that, and we've talked about it already, next week, October 2nd and 3rd, we've got an Ohio Linux Fest at the Columbus Convention Center in Columbus, Ohio. We're all going to be there. We're looking forward to seeing anyone else who listens to our podcast. Following that, we've got LinuxCon Europe, which is at the Convention Center Dublin in Dublin, Ireland. That's Monday, Wednesday, October 7th. LinuxCon Europe is a place to learn from the best and the brightest. They'll be delivering content from leading maintainers, developers, and project leads. They're pretty high on that event. And then also we have got on October 19th through the 20th at the Raleigh Convention Center in Raleigh, North Carolina, All Things Open, exploring open source and open tech and open web in the enterprise. And the Red Hat CEO will be giving a keynote, and his keynote title is Understanding Open Source Licenses. We've got several questions about open source licenses on our podcast, so I thought that was kind of cool. They're also going to have a session called Move Over rsync, and they said rsync is going to be over the network sync tool of choice for sysadmins for nearly a decade. All the indicators and competitors that have sprung up are generally either support or scale innovation. That's not necessarily the case anymore. So they've got, they're going to talk about file system level replication, such as, or PFS and other tools. It almost sounds like that would be an interesting session. All Things Open, North Carolina. Next up, we have got the 2015 Seattle GNU Linux Conference. It's called Seagull. That's S-E-A-G-L. The grass now, this is at the Seattle Central College, October 23rd and 24th. Seattle, Washington, the grassroots conference is dedicated to spreading awareness and knowledge about the Linux community and free and open software and hardware. So it sounds like a good one. And then next up, we've got the OSCON Europe. It's going to be in Amsterdam, Netherlands, one of my favorite European cities. That's Monday, October 26th through Wednesday, October 28th. This is sponsored by, of course, the O'Reilly Open Source, that's again the 26th to the 28th. And then 27th to the 29th, we've got the Open Source Developers Conference in Tasmania. There are three tracks for 3 days, and it costs you $350. And then finally, October 31st and November 1st in Liverpool, UK, we've got OddCamp. Now, this is a free software and free culture unconference. It's the largest event in the UK, and it should be a lot of fun. So, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the October Linux and Open Source Software Convention theme.
All right. All right, Mary, I think in audio editing I should be able to clean some of that up, but when you were leaning back, it was getting really faint.
Was it?
So just Yeah, see, that's much better.
Okay. Yeah, and, you know, it's because I'm doing it off my phone, so.
Right.
I can do a version, so. All right.
Well, yeah, we can do it. So, I think it'll be fine for this time.
All right. Very good. I'm down to 9%.
Still not charging?
No. I could get up and try to plug something else in here if you guys want to keep going with the next thing. What's up next?
Yeah, next up is news. So, great. Tom, you said you found an article or two?
Found an article or two. There is an article in the New York Times of why Volkswagen should have open source, kind of what we touched on in the listener feedback. And I kind of like they should have titled it, Closed Source is Bad for the Environment. I think that would have been a more fun title, but essentially, for people who aren't aware, Volkswagen cars are supposed to pass a emissions test. Volkswagen rigged it so when they plugged in the device that does the emissions test, the car would go into good emissions mode. And as soon as they unplugged it, it would go back to producing lots of smog and not producing it the same. I don't know. Some software programmer goes, well, I can't figure out the car, so I guess I'll just put this little trick in there until I figure it out later, which, you know, how like a small lie turns into an $8 billion problem. You know, I'm thinking it was just maybe a couple guys that came up with a solution and didn't tell anyone, and now they have this massive problem on their hand. So a couple thoughts on this would be, one, if it was open source, it would be easier to examine the source code that runs the cars. And we could look at things like the Chrysler hack, which we just talked about, where they simply didn't have a username and password. They would accept commands from anyone who sent them. It would give better examination to car companies and make sure they're producing something more secure. That's obviously a concern, especially with the Jeep one being so superior, this one being an environmental disaster. But still, this is an important topic. And car companies, of course, are notoriously trying to fight releasing information. They like to keep things. They actually had a proposal maybe like 7 or 8 years ago to what they call the hood locking legislation. They wanted no one to be able to open up the hood on cars. They didn't want to have to produce any type of documentation of how anything worked. And you could only go dealership only on this. Well, that's only opening it up to more and more hackers who are going to go, what are you hiding? And I want to know too. And of course, like with Jeep, it's not that they were hiding. The only thing they were trying to hide is some ineptitude. So, exactly, yeah, definitely something to think about there. Debian fighting with the CIA. Great title. More detail is they're working to produce all the Debian binaries as reproducible builds. This will give us a better and more secure way to check, because ideally you want all the MD5 from the source code to match the binaries that you're downloading. But the problem is if you don't document real well what compiler, which exact versions you use in some of those details, you're not going to get a reproducible build. You're like, hold on, my MD5 of this binary off the same source code is slightly different. This was the problem, for example, with the TrueCrypt audit. They had actually compiled with older versions of GCC and a few other weird things they had done when they started compiling, so you didn't get a binary match, so no one knew whether or not TrueCrypt was tampered with. So the code audit took a really long time. There's already a lot of other free software foundation stuff that's doing this. So Debian's now going, we're going to go document everything. We're going to make sure we can do reproducible builds and keep a nice, secure platform. So that way we know the binary we're downloading should be untouched by the CIA or any other three-letter government agencies. Let's Encrypt. They now have their first certificate was live a few days back. If you're not familiar with the Let's Encrypt project, that is a really awesome thing sponsored by the EFF and a lot of other places. Basically, it's a free SSL certificate, and what they're using it for is so everything can be encrypted. For example, my website or even SMR website, there's not really a reason to encrypt it because we're not doing any secure transactions. But we don't really need the NSA looking at everything. And it does have everything encrypted, because then it would create less and less, perhaps, metadata for other three-letter government agencies to pick up on. So what they did was giving out free certificates. Now, these certificates do SSL, but do not authorize you to use it for things like banking transactions or credit card or online sales or storefront. They're just simply encrypted ones. But, you know, the barrier for even me, my websites I have, why would I bother encrypting them and buying SSL certificates and going through the trouble? Well, this is a complete automatic installer, works with Apache, installs a free signed, goes, it actually has an installer that runs from the command line, goes out, gets, sets up and signs the certificate, does all the installing. The certificate's honored by all the major web browsers as a certificate authority. Like I said, you're just not using it for e-commerce, but it's completely valid to encrypt your website. And as soon as as soon as I know the project's stable, I'm going to run out and be putting it on all of my servers, even my personal ones I have, because why not? I have no excuse not to do it, so everything's going to get encrypted once this is done. But they did, their first certificate's now live. Android password hack. Now, this doesn't count for PIN numbers. This counts for any version Android 5X and 4.4 is affected, but not in exactly the same way. If you have a password, not just a PIN number, they found a buffer overflow that was pretty scary. You could just keep typing a longer and longer password, and you would copy and paste and keep pasting in from the screen until you would hit, I think it was like a 4,000 character limit, and it would buffer overflow the password stack. And when it would do that, the phone would pause, it would wait about 60 seconds, and then it would just let you in. So pretty severe hole in Android there. I guess on 4.4 the same thing happens. It crashes the phone, but it doesn't let you in. But on the 5X series, it lets you in. So, but if you're using a PIN number or pattern, you're safe.
Wow.
Yeah. That's
amazing. So you know, Tom, the way you read those news stories, it just is so friendly. It just makes me laugh. But it's a serious.
It's a friendly little bug.
that's serious stuff.
Oh. And last little thing is Qualcomm goes for Ubuntu for drone reference platform. Qualcomm's producing some new embedded chips based on the Snapdragon, and they will be using Ubuntu to run them. So now we can have open source drones. We've already had open source drones, but I think it's cool that Qualcomm, they're a big producer of this, is going to be going, okay, we're going to go with Ubuntu. I like this. You know, wish it was Debian. I'm fine with Ubuntu. It's still Linux. Makes me happy. Yep. That's it for the major ones, because we already mentioned a Genu birthday, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah, you took my one, which was the Let's Encrypt. it's live now, but yeah, that's why I'm really looking forward to that. I only have a few servers that I mess with, but I definitely want to get that running. And I think what we wanted to clarify is, you know, SSL is, it's not encrypting the actual web page. It's your session to the web page.
Yeah, you're right. I said it wrong, yeah. But.
You didn't say wrong. It just wasn't clear. Everything else you said was correct, where, you know, metadata around what website you go to and stuff. You know, people, a man in the middle, it's easy for them to collect it if it's not encrypted. So that's really something to look forward to.
And as through the Snowden documents and several interviews, you know, we had heard this before, but people who subscribe to Linux magazines are automatically on a list, and people who use Linux automatically get flagged as for their, like, they should watch us. So, you know, we're all on a list here, guys, because we all use Linux. So we're already collecting that type of metadata going, hey, those guys use Linux. They could potentially do things, you know, with their software that we don't know.
Jason, I bet they're, I'm switching to BSD, so I'm sure they're not going to track me now.
Oh, okay. Anyone who doesn't use Windows, I think it's on a list.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Hold on, you like freedom too much.
Yeah, that's for sure. There was an article I posted just along that line. I posted on Google Plus a couple days ago. It was about the British and how they're really kind of cross-referencing all of the different sites and things that their files, things that their users or their residents access, and how they're able to, you know, again, with big data, build profiles, or eventually we'll be able to build profiles on everything that you do. It's just,
yeah, they do a lot of that, and there's a current bill in the U.S. right now that is freeing up all the major companies from prosecution when they cooperate with government agencies. And now you got a lot of people flaming the businesses and going, hey, this is wrong because Microsoft's supporting it, Facebook is supporting it, Google, I'm not sure where they stand on it. But part of the problem is, I mean, I can't see why they wouldn't support it from their own safety perspective, because they're going, hold on, so we can provide you the information and we don't have to worry about getting sued later? Cool. You know, you're asking, they're basically, of course, they'll support a bill that gives them a free ride. It's exempting them, because if one administration says, we want all this info, the next administration go, that was wrong, we're going to prosecute companies that cooperate with the government, but they were forced into cooperation. So I don't think the company battle is the important side of it. The important aspect of it is that we, the people, go, no. This is not the right bill. We don't want to, you know, making exemptions doesn't make it right. We don't want to see the tie-in even deeper with all these big companies.
And we the people, have been able to stop things in the past, but I suspect that at some point, we, quote-unquote, we the people, are going to be unable to stop that.
It's a constant battle. I'm not ready to give it up. There's that worry, but yeah.
So anyway, yeah, interesting topic. Certainly warrants kind of probably one of our Fresh Looks episodes.
Yeah, we can put together a lot about just security and how it affects people and, you know, what it means to you, I guess, would be a good way to put it. Our crowd would probably be really on our side. How do we get the general public more aware? You know, all of us and most of our listeners are going, yeah, you know, we understand we need to encrypt this. We can't just give the governor everything. Other people are like, I'm not doing anything wrong. Well, I'm not worried about it. Let me just update my Facebook status.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. Good list of news items this week.
Yeah, I agree. So did you guys have anything else you wanted to talk about today, or I think we could be wrapping up?
No, other than I'm hovering at 7% on my phone.
So, all right. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you made it through for us right to the end.
Yeah, me too. Oh,
you know, 2.15.10 Wiley Werewolf did hit final beta.
Oh, you know, I saw that. One thing I do want to mention for listeners is that my next review, and maybe, you know, and I was going to mention this when we went through the distros, which we didn't do this week, but GhostBSD just released their latest version of their FreeBSD-based system, and I went ahead and downloaded it. Put it on my test system, and we'll be prepared to talk about it during our next episode where we have the distro review. So, look forward.
Yep. Do you hear me? Wiley Werewolf is the new 1510 Ubuntu. It's at final beta.
I didn't hear that. Okay. I think it's kind of fun that it's a werewolf, and it's going to be released in October.
So. Yes. I like that. That was planned.
Yeah. And that's why I wanted to look at GhostBSD too, just because of the ghost angle. But I was pleasantly surprised. I'll give you a little, you know, pleasantly surprised with it. And we'll talk, you know, I'll talk about that more.
Yeah, Ubuntu Touch is getting a little more updated as well. They're still working on that. I'm really thinking about, you can get some, I think, less than $100, and that's one of the little projects I'm really curious about is the Ubuntu phone, and I think I've seen a review that you can buy a device with it on there for less than $100 now. So it's not a great phone, it's not awesome, but I might play around with it, and I kind of want to test drive it, you know. I love Android, I won't lie, it's just been so convenient, it really works, but I want to give this a little test drive, you know, see how it works.
Yeah, and you can take a look at the screen.
Yep.
That little Android plug for the ear jack, so that I can plug that in there and interrupt any kind of surreptitious audio. You know, if somebody happens to turn that on. I got this a couple of weeks ago, but it's really pretty. For people who are just listening, it's just a tiny Android character on top of a little plastic jack plug that goes into the earphone jack.
So. Definitely pretty cool.
Yeah. That's all I got for this week.
All right, me too.
All right, cool. Yeah, again, next weekend is Ohio Linux Fest, which is October, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, or 3rd, 4th, 5th, something like that.
And me and Tony will be there.
Yeah, come out and see us. Mary's going to be there. Saturday morning, we're going to do our normal OLF man on the hallway, or what do you want to call it, where we're going to be standing around doing a little bit of our show, doing grabbing people to talk to. So if you're there, come by and see us in the morning, right, as everything's starting.
Cool.
Oh, one last closing note. If anyone would like to publicly sing, and I don't think we need to join in on this, happy birthday for GNU. It is out of the Warner Brothers lost their lawsuit, which means they can't charge us for it, and it is now free to sing happy birthday again.
Yay.
Copyright wins a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Thanks again for watching. You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 160.
Happy birthday to you, GNU.
Happy birthday, GNU.
That's right. And this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Tom Lawrence.
And see you next week from OLF.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. K. Wisher, Haunty Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night. Interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.